views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was searching for the purpose of her life and the truth that would tie everything together to make sense of what was taught and what was happening on our planet, the fire that was creating all the smoke. Through many experiences, she was finally led to the Knowledge Book that provided all the answers. Marge is now talking about this gift to humanity on Knowledge Book Radio, so all can be united in peace, love, and harmony. This live call-in show at 1-800-930-2819 is amazing. So get ready to hear about the Knowledge Book. Here's your host, Marge Potasek.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marge Potasek, and you are listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek on Transformation Talk Radio. For the next hour, as we've been doing for, I guess, a year and a half now, we'll continue to cover some topics from the Knowledge Book and other topics. And this week, and sometimes we answer listener questions, and this week we are going to talk about the domino effect. And this is looking at the Knowledge Book from a different perspective, and we'll go into the topic of the domino effect. But before we go on, I would like to remind everyone that our website, our United States website, is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. That's all one word. Then the Turkish World Brotherhood Union website is www.dkbdavidkiteboy-mevlana.org.tr. And of course, my contact information is 973-787-7035. Email address is mmjp99@gmail.com. That's marymaryjohnpeter99@gmail.com. So please do email or text me or call with any questions that you may have that either arise from today's topics or previous shows, or maybe questions from the Knowledge Book itself. Maybe there's something that you're confused about or don't know how to put together. Maybe we could help with introducing this topic to more than just one individual. And always, topics and questions for future shows are always very welcome. Okay, so let's start on the domino effect. Now, of course, usually when I start a topic, I like to know what I'm talking about, so I go straight for the definition. So the domino effect, or a chain reaction, is the cumulative effect produced when one event sets off a chain of similar events. And this term, the domino effect, is best known as a mechanical effect, and it is used as an analogy of a falling row of dominoes. I think we've all played dominoes, or maybe we've seen dominoes on the internet where different patterns of dominoes are set up. When you trip and knock over the first domino, it sets off the reaction where all the subsequent dominoes just come falling on each other all the way down the line, okay? And what the domino effect usually refers to is a linked sequence of events where the time between successive events is fairly small. Now, the term itself can be used literally as an observed series of actual collisions, or metaphorically, meaning these are causal linkages within systems such as global finance or politics. Now, it could also mean either positive or negative in the sense that the term domino effect is used both to imply that an event is inevitable or highly likely, as it has already started to happen, and conversely, or the opposite, to imply that an event is impossible or highly unlikely, because sometimes there is only one domino that's left standing, which means that event was not transferred and the domino was standing, so it didn't happen. Now, there's an example of how the domino effect works. So if you could imagine a row of houses that are shaped kind of in the position or the shape of a domino, and each one of these dominoes are actually have a heading, have a title. So this is what happened back in 2008 when we had the subprime scandal. So the subprime mortgages, when they started to fail, they affected the mortgage companies, they affected then the lenders, then they affected the home builders, then that affected the markets, and then they affected the economy, U.S. economy, and that also affected the world economy. So it was a domino effect, a chain of events that one led to the other, to the other, to the other, with increasing consequences in size and impact. Now, the other term that's used for the domino effect is a chain reaction. Now, chain reaction is something that's a sequence of reactions where the reactive product, the outcome or byproduct, causes additional reactions to take place. And in a chain reaction, positive feedback leads to a self-amplifying chain of events. So this is how we get the atomic bomb. This is how the uranium, which releases a neutron, and that neutron then, okay, so the uranium atom is first hit with a neutron. That neutron causes the uranium atom to split, producing a barium and a krypton atom, plus another neutron. That neutron or produces three neutrons. Those neutrons then hit the next three uranium atoms, splitting them, and you'll get three barium and three krypton atoms being produced, and again, three more neutron per each collision being formed. And as you're going down the line, more and more uranium atoms are affected, and the outcome or the result of the cracking of the uranium atom produces other atoms that then affect other atoms in the series. You could also think of it also as if you have, let's say, a room full or a table full of ping pong balls in an enclosed space. And the ping pong balls are each set up on a mousetrap. The mousetrap is set up to go off. Once you hit one ping pong ball into one of those mousetraps, that releases the mousetrap, and the mousetrap spring then propels that ping pong ball into the air, which then hits another ping pong ball on a mousetrap, and so on and so on. So more and more ping pong balls are hitting other ping pong balls on mousetraps. So in the end, the entire table is completely filled with ping pong balls and released and mousetraps. So this is a chain reaction. Now there's another way that something affects something else, and that's called the snowball effect. And this is a process that starts from an initial state of small significance and builds upon itself, becoming larger, graver, and more serious, and also perhaps potentially dangerous or disastrous, which would be called a vicious circle. Though it also could be a beneficial instead, like a virtuous circle. So an example of this is of a vicious circle where a snowball starts becoming bigger and bigger and a bigger, bigger snowball, then eventually becomes an avalanche, which then can destroy the forest or destroy a town, depending on how big the avalanche is. Now, we also have an example of a virtuous circle. This is something like Gandhi or Dr. Martin Luther King, and their peaceful resistance set off a ripple effect, a snowball effect on others to be able to opt for nonviolent protest for change. And we all know what happened with Gandhi's effects and also with Martin Luther King. Now we also have something called the ripple effect. And these are all various ways that one thing or one person affects another person or another thing. So the ripple effect is a continuing and spreading result of an event or action. And in here, the energy actually spreads in a circular motion going outwards. So it's going outwards from the trigger, which happened at the center. And the effect is one to many, going from an epicenter, the center, until it hits a barrier that reflects the waves. So if you think of a calm lake, if you throw a stone into that lake, then it forms ripples, all these waves going outward from where the stone hit the water. And the waves are going outwards in a circular fashion, and so it affects everything. All the water particles that it's going through, that wave affects every one of them as it's going through. And eventually, when it hits a barrier, the wave bounces back to itself and proceeds back to the center. Okay? So in summary, whatever you want to call it, whether we're talking about the domino effect, the chain reaction, a snowball effect, or a ripple effect, we're actually talking about some initial decision and some initial action that causes a change or an effect in someone else or something else. The result then becomes the cause to change something, someone else, or something else. So again, the next step would be the change, the effect that happens, that happened to occur. Then, whether it's linear, being one-to-one-to-one, or circular, or whether it's building upon itself and getting bigger, or rippling as like a stone, causing the waves in a lake, it has the potential to create something much bigger than the initial decision action that was taken or the effect intended. So maybe someone threw a snowball down a mountain, and that was completely an unintended effect. However, in the end, that snowball could eventually produce an avalanche. Now, in the example we were talking about 2008, with the subprime lending scandal, the initial intent for those individuals who created this type of sales pitch, they wanted to make a buck. They wanted to make some money. But what happened, however, the impact of this first action that they took, the selling of those subprime mortgages to people, had this effect of actually not only impacting themselves, but impacting their community, the national community, and eventually the world community. So some initial action has the potential of creating something that we are not aware of, or we have no idea of how things can turn out. Now, there's also something called the butterfly effect. And this is where an action as slight and light as the beating of a butterfly wing, let's say in Brazil, can cause a hurricane in the U.S., and this was noticed first by meteorologist Edward Lorenz. Now, Edward Lorenz was trying to figure out how the storms would progress, how hurricanes would progress, and what storm systems or what weather would be produced depending on certain variables that were put into the system. This has something to do with chaos theory as well. So he has formulated a formula. And that formula was used to then produce or project weather patterns in the future for the meteorologist then to be able to predict what is coming as far as weather is concerned. So what happened? One day, he wanted to go get coffee, so he left the computer working. And when he came back, something had happened where the outcome was not quite what he had expected. So he had to rerun the program again. And instead of calling the computer guys to come fix the computer, he decided to run the process again, run the program again. And what he did was he took the output of the initial outcome, which was not the actual number that he had put in previously, was actually a rounded off number. So the difference was actually between the first number and the second number that he had put in was the difference of four zeros in front of a one. In other words, it was 0.00001. That was the difference in the computation in the data that he was putting in. And what happened was, up to a certain point, the weather patterns produced were similar. However, when projected further on into the future, those weather patterns were completely different. So what he noticed that when you have a very small change in the additional conditions, meaning a fifth position after a decimal point, when you have even those tiny perturbations and differences in the initial condition, then it produces humongous effects like a hurricane that gets produced further on in time. And the other thing that came out of this was this kind of experiment that he ran was that when you do the plot of the outcome of his formula and you start graphing it on a graph, at first everything's looked disjointed because a point here, a point there, a point here, a point somewhere else. However, if you have enough of those points being graphed, it turns out to look like a spiral or an infinity sign that is kind of squished in on itself. And when you look at it, it kind of looks like a butterfly wings. So that's how the term butterfly effect came into use. So initial slight change in the condition can eventually produce humongous change at the end. Okay, so let's picture there's something that I would like to share, and that is, you know how people go and they have a few drinks or whatever, stop by for tea, and they start thinking and talking about what they've done and what this and that and the other. So imagine two butterflies. They're on bar stools having a cocktail, and one butterfly says to the other butterfly, "Remember that hurricane 1,000 miles away? That was me. He was bragging about causing a hurricane by flapping his wings." But now let's talk about something else, a little bit different. And we all know that meditation has benefits. Some of these benefits can lower the heart rate and the blood pressure. It can help to boost our immune function, meaning we can fight off more diseases. It can improve our breathing. In other words, it also increases the airflow into the lungs, which means we can breathe easier. And that is not only good for asthma patients, but it's also good for everyone and athletes, especially when they need to practice to have greater endurance. Now, I don't know if anybody is familiar with this, but a meditation can also decrease the aging process. You could slow it down. And on the other side, it can improve creativity, being able to learn things faster, to improve memory. It makes you emotionally stable, and you feel vitality and rejuvenated. You have mental clarity and happiness. And conversely, it helps to decrease anxiety and depression. And meditation can be done at anywhere, at any time, at no cost to anyone. And it has all these beautiful benefits that have been documented by science, tested and documented by science. Now, this is on an individual level, but what happens when many people do a meditation at the same time? How does that affect things? How does that affect space? How does that affect the people? And how does that affect what's going on around them? Now, back in the 1960s, there was a yogi named Maharishi Mahesh Yogi who said that when there is a certain amount of people who are performing coherent meditation or performing transcendental meditation in a space, they will affect on the local environment. So he actually has a formula that when a square root of the population, actually the square root of 1% of the population in a specific area, when that number of people start practicing transcendental meditation as a group, as a number of individuals, that was supposed to affect the people who are living in that area. And this was eventually called the Maharishi effect. This was tested and is still being tested in many places and in many countries. So there was a test done in Washington, D.C., and they did a study on the number of how much crime was committed at a certain point in time, without the meditation, with the meditation, and once the meditation stopped. So what they found is that 23.3% violent crime dropped because there was a meditating group that was doing their meditation at that time. So what they found in a two-month national demonstration, that was a project that was conducted in Washington, D.C., showed that a coherence-creating group of TM Siddhas. Now, TM Siddhas are different than regular meditators. They have the ability to reduce crime and social stress and to improve the effectiveness of government. So this was a carefully controlled scientific demonstration that was carried out between June 7th and July 30th of 1993. And what the study showed was that when you have a group of TM Siddhas, starting with about 800, and they were increasing the number of Siddhas that were meditating to about 4,000 at the end of the trial, they found that the crime was prevented and showed a maximum 23.3 reversal in predicted violent crime trend. So as you know, the FBI keeps track of violent crimes like homicides, rapes, and assaults. And they can project based on what's going on in the previous time what is expected to happen long term. So they found that a 23% drop in the long term effects, meaning that the crime rate dropped. And also, during the time of meditation, the number of deaths slowed down and people were feeling better. Now, the police commissioner at that time, the chief of police, said that, well, you know, the only thing that'll stop crime in Washington, D.C. is if we had a 20-inch drop of snow. And I guess you could imagine, and I know for a fact that once you have at least 20 inches of snow or 30 inches of snow or even 15 inches of snow, everything grinds to a halt. Everything stops. Nothing can move anywhere. So that will stop everything in its track. But this crime prevention project took place during the summer hot weather. So there's no way that, let's say, a snowstorm could account for the effects of the meditation. Now, before the project was started, violent crime had been steadily increasing during the first 5 months of the year. And sadly, a week or so after the start of the study, a week or so after the study was started, the violent crime, meaning homicides, rapes, and aggravated assaults, as measured by the FBI Uniform Crime Statistics, began decreasing and continued to drop until the end of the experiment. Now, before the project, the researchers had publicly predicted that the coherence group would reduce the trend of crime by 20%. And again, the chief of police ridiculed this projection and again said something about snow. In the end, the maximum decrease was 23.3, below the time series prediction for that period of the year. So this is a significant reversal in the predicted crime trend, and the most significant part of the effect was when the size of the group was at its largest, meaning when that group was about 4,000 people meditating at that time. And again, this was done during a heat wave. So the statistical probability that this result could reflect chance variations in crime levels was less than 2 in 1 billion, meaning 0.00000002. So it's a very slight chance that maybe something like temperature, precipitation, weekends, police and community anti-crime activities could have affected this drop in crime. And when you look at the way this experiment was conducted, the research is considered to be very reliable by the usual standards of social science. And this is the sad part. When the project was disbanded, when they finished the testing, the crime rate for homicides, rapes, and aggravated assaults did begin to rise again. So it was not a permanent effect. It was a temporary effect. Now, this was not the only study that was conducted. There are also studies that were done in the 1970s and also recently from 2007 to 2010. And when those people, that 1% of the population, that was then the square root of 1% of the population, when that amount of individuals were doing the transcendental or the TM Siddha meditation, they found that the crime rate dropped significantly. Now, during the 2007-2010, when a group of advanced TM Siddha program participants exceeded the threshold predicted to reduce negative trends, square root of 1% of the population, there was a significant shift in the U.S. national homicidal rate and urban violent crime. Now, compared to the baseline of 2002-2006 rates of homicide, the rate was reduced by 21.2% or 5.3% per year, and 18.5%, 4%, 4.6% per year for violent crime. So homicide rates dropped 21.2%, and violent crime was reduced by 18.5%. Now, between 2007 and 2010, when there was a larger group or sufficiently large group, again, the statistical analysis of the data of the crime rate or the crime statistics found a significant decrease in both the national homicide rate and urban violent crime rate compared to the trends during the baseline period of 2002 and 2006. Now, when they did the analysis for the baseline period of 2002 to 2006, when they analyzed this monthly data, it showed a rising trend of U.S. homicides. However, during that intervention period between 2007 and 2010 of the study, it turns out that this rising trend was reversed and was a downward trend where less crime, less homicides were committed. So what the researchers estimated was that 8,157 homicides were averted by the highly significant shift from an increasing to a decreasing trend in homicide rates. This is the effect of this coherent meditation that took place. So the drop in the violent crime rate was 18.5% or 4.6% per year. And the study found a very significant, highly significant shift from the flat trend in 2002 to 2006 to a declining trend in 2007-2010 for a sample of 206 urban areas nationwide with a population of over 100,000. So this experiment was done both nationally on local level in cities and also was done in other countries as well, everything showing that the meditation, group meditation, was effective in changing the way things worked in the surrounding area. And the research of all this data also suggests that there is a field effect of consciousness. So if there is a large enough group together practicing the technique, then that changes the field quality of consciousness. And this field quality extends and is affects in society in general. So this hypothesis of a field effect of consciousness implies that an underlying connection between individuals, that there is an underlying connection between individuals in much the same way that physics has uncovered great unity beneath the diversity of matter and energy fields. So the more powerfully that underlying field is enlivened, the greater the unifying influence of peace and harmony on the surface levels of life. So when you think about one person meditating and putting two people together and three people together, I think we all realize and we've heard that when you have more than one person, when a group of people meditates, that's the effect is much, much greater. Now, I just want to add one thing. when they're talking about the coherent Siddha meditation, the coherent TM, transcendental meditation, Siddha meditation, this is done in this way. Every individual who's taking part in this meditation is sitting in a lotus posture, and keeping that posture, they are jumping. They are jumping on a cushion. They're traveling. They're traversing like frogs are leaping from place to place. And this is what you need to do to be able to create that coherent meditation that affects the population. So I don't know about anybody else, but you need to be in pretty good shape to be able to do that and maintain that kind of a meditation. Now, if we look at New York City with a population of maybe 9 million, you would need 300 of these siddhas to be able to affect the entire city. Now, I want to compare what's going on, because when there is a reflection point, focal point in a city, and that reflection focal point has 21 people present, then those 21 people, those 21 brain powers that are attending the focal point are actually influencing and affecting the entire city. So 21 people as opposed to 300 that is needed for the siddha. And the 21 people, they are not jumping around in lotus posture. They are basically sitting comfortably in a chair and reading and focusing on what is being read, that fascicle that is being read that Saturday. So this kind of gives you an inkling of the effect of the knowledge book programs as compared to the Siddha program, which is a group meditation program of a specific kind. So we've been talking about the chain reaction, dominant effect, snowball effect, ripple effect, butterfly effect. How does this work, and how does the knowledge book fit in to this topic that we've just covered? So first of all the reading, all the knowledge book studies and all the and the reading program that's being done by people, they're actually a meditation program, because meditation in itself is defined as focusing the mind on a specific image, words, ideas, and etc. So while people are doing the reading program, or while in any of the studies, whether it's a totality of 18, a council of 3, a flower, a reflection focal point, or whatever the study is, what is done is that the mind is focused on the fascicle being read, the mind is focused on trying to understand what is being read, and fully immersed in that reading. And the entire point is to be able to understand the words and the ideas that are presented. And the knowledge book basically doesn't give anything really, it's not obvious what's going on. You have to put the ideas together, you have to fit things together. It's like fitting the pieces of a puzzle and creating an entire picture. And the knowledge book, we haven't talked about prayer, but meditation also uses prayers. In other words, when you're reciting mantras or when you're reciting a specific prayer in a specific program, like, you know, the Christian dimension or the Islamic dimension or the Eastern dimension, the knowledge book also functions just like prayers. So every prayer and every mantra, as stated in the knowledge book, is a mechanism, is a method, is a technology through which the energies and the frequencies that are contained in that mantra, in that prayer, are actually delivered from a specific dimension to the individual who is actually reciting that prayer and mantra. Now, in the knowledge book, every word in the knowledge book is a frequency key, is a handle, is the key that opens a specific dimension and gives the energies, the frequencies, and the knowledge of that dimension to anyone who's actually at the level of the evolution that's required by that dimension. And then the knowledge book progresses and you progress step by step, because just like in other prayers, in other words, someone could give you a prayer or a mantra that is supposed to be recited for a specific period of time in conjunction with a practice, and as you've accumulated those energies in yourself with that practice, then the teacher, the guru, the priest, the imam, whoever gives you the next step in that practice, and you get a new mantra, a new prayer, something else to do, which then allows you to go to get the energies of that higher dimension, that higher energy and knowledge that's contained in that dimension. And this is done automatically through the light photon cycling technique in the knowledge book, where every word in that book, when you put the words together, you'll have the same word repeated in one fascicle, then another fascicle, then another fascicule, and you start to wonder, why are they using that fascicle with these words here, other words here, other words somewhere else? Next thing you know, you read something, you've evolved to a particular level, and next thing you know, the entire picture comes together and the entire dimension is open to you, and those energies, knowledge, and frequencies are given to you from that dimension, and now you've earned the right to go and get energies from the next higher dimension. And this is done automatically by the photon light cyclone technique of the knowledge book. And we know that we've opened up the dimension because at that point we understand what we are reading, we can remember what we've read, and we are now able to then start receiving energies from the next higher dimension. Okay? Now, the knowledge book actually delivers the full benefits of meditations as found in scientific research, meaning those individuals who study the knowledge book or are with the knowledge book the knowledge book studies have a calming effect. Anytime that we finish our council meeting, anytime we finish a focal point, you know that you've done the job right when you come out of those meetings feeling happy, feeling much more joyful than you were before, feeling calmer, and you're feeling better. Anytime I've personally been under some kind of the weather, meaning not feeling 100%, being sick due to some kind of a cold or something was going on, anytime that I stayed with the council program or with the focal point program, I was able then by the end of that session, by the end of the study, I was feeling much better, if not completely better. Now, in addition, there were some UCLA studies that were done, University of California in Los Angeles. They were done, and the researchers used MRIs to scan the brains of a group of subjects who were longtime meditators. And what they found is this. These individuals who were longtime meditators, their brains were larger than those of non-meditating people. Another study found that the people who meditated regularly did not age as fast and did not lose their gray matter as fast as those who did not meditate. So also what they found is that the meditators' brains have noticeably thicker tissue in the prefrontal cortex. Now this is the region of the brain that's responsible for attention and control. So not only can meditation prevent brain cells from dying, which is what happens usually when we start to age, but it can also boost a person's brain size in several crucial regions. Furthermore, researchers have also concluded that meditation can actually make a person more intelligent. Evidence also demonstrates that people who meditate regularly are able to focus more deeply and deal with stress better than non-meditators. So science confirms what everyone who has been meditating for a long time knows, that a consistent meditative practice decreases stress and increases well-being. And I want to point out that as people are in the knowledge book programs, as they continue to work with the knowledge book, those same effects are also happening, though maybe with less effort, in the sense that we don't have to be sitting in lotus posture at a dedicated time of day for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours on a daily basis. We just need to sit and read for 40 minutes, 45 minutes, however long it takes us to read a fascicle, and maybe for 2 hours in a council program where we go through and read the entire fascicle and explain it to the best of our ability. So we don't have to go through, and this is done once a week. The reading program is done on a daily basis, and the focal point is also on a once-a-week basis. Okay. And the effects are given. So what happens with the knowledge book? When we are successfully accomplishing the reading program, so not only are we attaining the full physical benefits that have been researched and documented by scientific studies, we are also starting a chain reaction, a ripple effect, a snowball effect, a butterfly effect, and so on, not only for ourselves, but for others. Because in the knowledge book reading program that's currently in place, where the knowledge book that you have, the purple book that you have put your signature in that book, that becomes your personal book, and that in itself opens up the infinite dimensions to you as far as receiving energies, frequencies, and knowledge, but that depends on your evolution level. Okay, so you can never get more than you are capable of receiving and that your body and energy body is capable of receiving and handling. So what's happening when we're doing this reading program? We are enabling the engraftment of consciousness to at least 1,000 of our coordinates. And this is done automatically without any additional effort on our part. Meaning, as we are doing the reading, as we're focusing, as we're trying to understand what we are reading, at least 1,000 of our coordinates are found, and at least 1,000 of our coordinates are being engrafted with consciousness. And that consciousness engraftment, and then starts a chain reaction, starts a domino effect, starts a ripple effect for the others around them and for them to be able to eventually get to the point of evolution where they are able to come in contact with the knowledge book and also do the same for others. And as we are building up our magnetic field through the energies and frequencies we are receiving, through the knowledge that we are receiving from the knowledge book, as we are walking around with our magnetic field everywhere, we are like Gandhi, we are like Martin Luther King. We are causing ripple effects in the area that we go to, whatever we do, whether we're going shopping, whether we're going to the movies, whether we're going anywhere or having tea with friends, whatever we do. So whatever we've been able to incorporate into ourselves as far as our magnetic field is, we are creating different waves as we're walking around and doing our everyday tasks, going to work, whatever it is. Now let's take a look, another look at all this. Earlier, we talked about how many people in the formula of the Maharishi effect. So I would like to point out that a single fascicle of the knowledge book has more power than 1,000 meditators. So that one fascicle has enough impact of 1,000 meditators being in one place during the same practice. So according to the Maharishi effect, New York City would need the square root of 1% of the population to obtain the attendant effect, meaning a decrease in crime rate and increase in well-being. So let's say, for ease of calculation, that New York City has a population of about 9 million. Well, I'm shorting it a bit, but it's easier to work with 9 million. So the formula, when we plug it into the Maharishi formula, would be the square root of 1% of 9 million. So that winds up being 300. So we would need about 300 TM siddhas doing coherent meditation to affect New York City. We would need 300 of those siddhas. I call them flying siddhas, or they're called flying siddhas because they are jumping like frogs in lotus position from place to place. And that's how they are totally focused on that one thing, and coherence in meditation takes place. And as I had mentioned before, when there are 21 people at the focal point, then that 21 people's brain power affects 9 million people in New York City. This is the power of the knowledge book and the power of the knowledge book studies. So the number 21 is basically 7% of the 300 jumping needed, siddhas needed. So this is how powerful the knowledge book is and what the effects are. Now, there have been discussions off and on the radio and on the news. What's going on in New York City? Crime rate is dropping. Crime rate is dropping. People have come up with all kinds of theories as to what's going on, but we have more and more councils in New York City, so I'm hoping that this is the effect that actually is happening. Now let's look at another example. The Maharishi testing and projects also included effects on the entire United States. So when we use the entire formula of the Maharishi effect and apply to the United States, and let's say in 2010, population of the United States was 309,300,000. If we take the square root of 1% of that, we wind up with approximately 1,800 people. So we would need about 2,000 people of coherent siddhas to affect the entire United States population. But once we have a strong enough magnetic field that's built by councils, and once the totality of 18 is established in the United States, only 18 people, meaning 0.1% of the siddhas required, would form a vertical reflection line from the cosmos to the entire country. And the cosmos would then provide whatever is needed by all the individuals in that country, whether it's the place to live that's proper for them to live, the kind of job that they're supposed to have, and everything will be proceeding much more quickly and smoothly. So on a personal level, the knowledge book says we are our thoughts, and our thoughts manifest our reality. It also says, the knowledge book also says, be good, think good, do good. And as long as we are following this motto, then we can create and live a reality we all want. So at every moment, at every breath, we are faced with a decision that affects our life, decides what step we are going to make. But we'll go further into this topic maybe at a future show. But I just want to mention this, that we need to be ever mindful. However, that at each breath, at each thought, we are creating ourselves. We are creating our reality. We are creating our existence, or we are destroying ourselves through the chain reactions we are initiating. So now is a good time for a break. And we'll be back with Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik. And again, my phone number is 973-787-7035. We'll go for a break and then we'll come back and talk about the domino effect. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher Sarah Luce brings her unique style to the hit show Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit saraloos.com. That's SaraLoos.com.
Take your own journey with the angels with Claire Candy Hoff's heaven-sent guided angel meditation CD. Letting go of concerns and living in the now. This beautiful CD walks listeners through practical exercises to help free them from the burdens, worries, and concerns of daily life.
Walking a quarter of the way across the bridge, you see a bright emerald green light and sense a loving presence. This is Archangel Raphael's green healing energies, nourishing and revitalizing you. Take a moment now to bathe in this green healing light.
Giving you much more than just relaxation and stress release, this wonderfully narrated CD provides vivid visualization, soothing and inspiring music, and an angel's choir that will bring you peace, clarity, and a newfound awareness. Visit angelhealinghouse.com today.
We're back on the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on Transformation Talk Radio. And once again, I would like to remind you that our website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. My telephone number is 973-787-7035. And this is for texting or for questions or suggestions for the next shows. And my email address is mmjp99@gmail.com. And another reminder, that's marymaryjohnpeter@gmail.com, that we are still offering the 3 chapters that are free, no strings attached, as a sample to see how you react with the knowledge book and whether this is something that you would like to do. Because all of us have come to this planet with a specific purpose and a specific goal. And each one of us knows what that is somewhere deep inside. And if we allow that to percolate and become, and we become aware of what that purpose and goal is, most of us will come to the conclusion that we are here to serve, that we are here on a mission to create peace on this planet and to be able to save ourselves and save others. So what have we been covering? We've been covering different ways that something affects something else. We've been covering what the knowledge book calls a cause and effect chain, meaning something happens, the initial condition happens. That initial condition then creates another condition, creates an effect. And that effect in itself then becomes the cause for the next effect to happen. And that becomes the cause for the next effect to happen. And what do we do? This happens all the time, whether we attend good or we attend not so good. This happens all the time. Sometimes when we don't do anything at all, that is also something that could cause an effect that is unintended or intended. No decision is also a decision. So when we come to where we are aware of something, let's say we are aware of a child crying. We are aware of someone being poor and hungry. When we become aware, also at the same time, some kind of idea about that will come arise, right? And when that idea arises, how quickly we take action is how conscious we are. So we can measure our own consciousness level by looking at what we were aware of, what ideas we have about that, and how quickly are we act to on the idea that we have. So, and then just by reading the knowledge book, being in a knowledge book program, we are affecting everyone and everything around us. So our action, as slight as a flapping of a butterfly wing, has tremendous effect down the line. Our initial step into the knowledge book, which is easy to do by getting the first, the chapters that are free just to sample it. When we are reading that fascicle, we are affecting ourselves, we are affecting the people around us, and we are affecting the magnetic field around us. Now, depending on the program that you are in, there is a different reflection mechanism in each program. So when you're doing a reading program, the reflection is 1 to 1,000. This is the reading program done from the knowledge, Purple Knowledge Book, where you have your signature in that book. And that book becomes your very own guru and gives to you exactly what you need, when you need it, and how you need it. And that's in terms of experience, that's in terms of energies and frequencies. So that's 1 to 1,000. When you are in a council, we work at the same level as the Cosmo programs in Turkey, which means we reflect 1 to 10,000. Or is it 1 to 1,000? 1 to 1,000 or 1 to 10,000. When you're in a totality of 18, each member of the totality of 18 reflects 1 to 1,000, but the core 3 in that totality of 18 reflects 1 to 10,000. So we, over time, by being at those levels, are able to gradually change through the ripple effect, through the chain reactions that occur, through all the actions that we make, and the way we are, meaning more peaceful, more calm, more loving, more tolerant, more accepting, that we are able then to change what is happening around us. And eventually, step by step, we are able to both save ourselves and saving others through the service that we provide. So if anyone has any questions about this or anything else to do with the knowledge book, please do email me or call me, or call anyone that you know that is in the knowledge book. This is a very, very powerful program, as we've been going through, as far as comparing the numbers and what it needs, what it takes to have a Siddha program, what you need to do to be a TM Siddha, and to accomplish what the knowledge book could accomplish with a lot fewer people with less effort. So we've been talking about the domino effect. We've been talking about the programs, knowledge book programs, but now it's time to finish because we're running out of time. So please know that any questions or topics, please send them to us. Please join me here every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, a Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik. And if you'd like, we could schedule a conference with you. We'll come to where you live and we'll give a conference about the Knowledge Book and answer any questions about the Knowledge Book and its studies. So as Mrs. Chirac often repeats, humanities and the Knowledge Book states, humanity's verdict is in humanity's hands. And we are reminded that you are the ones who will save the world. Thank you. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik. Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity, and its time of transition to the Golden Age that provided the truth and energies and frequencies. Now, she shares information from and answers questions about the Knowledge Book with you each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit Marge at usa.theknowledgebook.net.